Captions and audio description provided by Caption Max. www.captionmax.com.
At night, a man stands on a city sidewalk. A title appears, DOA, a United Artists release. The man steps off the curb and crosses toward a building. Later, he strides down a corridor as more words appear, starring Edmund O'Brien and Pamela Britton. He passes through a doorway. Frosted glass above the door reads, Police Department. More credits, with Luther Adler, Beverly Campbell, Neville Brand, Lynn Baggett, William Ching, Henry Hart, and Laurette Luez. The man passes service windows where workers look through papers. Music written and directed by Dmitry Tiomkin. A cop glances up and points the man down the hallway. Executive producer Harry M. Popkin. The man makes his way down a long hall lined with doorways. More credits. Story and screenplay, Russell Rouse and Clarence Green. Associate producer, Joseph H. Nadel. The man continues down the hall. He wears a dark suit and combed back black hair. More credits. Director of photography, Ernest Laszlo. Art director, Duncan Kramer. Film editor, Arthur H. Nadel. Set decorations, Al Orenbach. Assistant director, Marty Moss. Costumes by Maria Donovan. Makeup, Irving Burns. Sound recording, Ben Winkler and Mac Dalgleish. Produced by Leo C. Popkin. Directed by Rudolph Matei. At the end of the hall, the man turns to a door at his right. A frosted glass pane reads, Homicide Division. He hesitates, then opens the door and walks inside. Inside, three men read at a table. The man walks to a desk where two more men sit. One looks up.
Can I help you?
I'd like to see the man in charge. He's in here.
The man at the desk rises and leads the visitor into another office, where the captain reads at a desk.
I want to report a murder.
Sit down. Where was this murder committed?
San Francisco, last night.
Who was murdered?
The visitor's tie hangs loosely from his unbuttoned collar. Dirt stains his suit coat.
I was.
The man at the desk eyes him, then turns to a stack of papers.
Well, do you want to hear me out or don't you, Captain? I don't have very much time.
The captain pulls a sheet from a stack.
Your name Bigelow? Frank Bigelow?
That's right.
The captain turns to the other man.
Answer the San Francisco APB. Send it direct to Inspector Bannon at Homicide. Tell him we found Frank Bigelow. Go ahead, Mr. Bigelow.
Bigelow's eyes droop shut, then open.
Well, this involves some other people, Captain. A number of other people.
You tell it any way you like.
I live in a little town called Banning out on the desert. It's on the way to Palm Springs. I have a small business there.
The scene fades to Bigelow and a woman at an office desk.
Paula.
Another woman enters.
Yes, Mr. Bigelow.
Give me a copy of Miss Hollis's 48 tax return, will you? You better get the 47, too.
Yes, Mr. Bigelow.
I don't think we took any depreciation on that new equipment last year.
No, we didn't. I remember you said we could include it all this year.
Sure we can.
Hey, Frank.
Yeah, well.
Peterson says he wants a financial statement before he can give me my loan. Hello, Kitty.
I will.
Well, I'm leaving for San Francisco today, but I'll be back in about a week. I'll take care of it for you then.
Sure is a scorcher, isn't it?
Well, I've seen him worse.
Well, have a nice time, Frank.
Yeah, thanks, Will.
Paula, why don't you come down to the place and let me give you another permanent? Makes your hair so much easier to manage in all this heat.
I can't afford it right now. Maybe next month.
Yeah, here it is. No, we didn't take it. Well, we can do it this year.
You work it out any way you think fit. Have a nice trip, Frank.
Sure, Kitty. See you when I get back.
Bon voyage.
Kitty backs into Paula.
Why don't you come down anyway, Paula? We'll work out a deal on that permanent.
Thanks, maybe I will.
Kitty grins at Frank as she leaves. Paula answers the phone.
Hello? Oh, hello, Mr. Hawkins. Just a moment. Do you want him to send your ticket over?
No, I'll pick it up myself.
No, never mind. Mr. Bigelow will pick it up at the station. Bye.
As Frank gathers his things, Paula steps in close.
I want to go with you, Frank.
Now, Paul, I'm just going on a little vacation, you know that?
You want to go without me, don't you?
Be gone just a week.
And I suppose you've just made up your mind to take this little vacation at 9 o'clock this morning?
No, Paul, I meant to tell you about it a few days ago. I guess I forgot.
Oh, you forgot.
Paula, don't be like that.
Don't be like what? You just drop a little announcement that you're going away. Not tomorrow or next week or next month, but today. No explanations, nothing. And I'm supposed to swallow the excuse that you need a little vacation.
I just want to get away from town for a few days, that's all.
Get away from this town or get away from me.
Oh, Paula, please try to understand.
How can you ask me to understand anything like this? No, I'm sorry, but I don't understand.
She starts to leave, then turns.
Go to San Francisco, but don't expect me to be waiting for you when you get back.
Frank flinches as the door slams. He turns to a filing cabinet. He looks back at the sound coming from another office. Frank walks into the office, where Paula rushes to stuff items into her purse.
Paula, please, Paula. Come on, turn around, look.
He leans in for a kiss, and she turns her face away. He tries again, and she avoids him.
Come here.
Why do you do this to me, Frank? Why can't you be honest with me, as honest as I am with you? Do you have to go?
I have to go, Paula. I know what I'm doing.
All right, go. Go anywhere you like. You can go to blazes for all I care.
Paula. Paula.
Yes, I know. I'm being foolish.
Paula wipes a tear from her eye. Frank takes the handkerchief and brushes it below her eyes, then kisses her cheek.
Come on, fix your face. We'll go down to Eddie's and have a drink.
All right, why not?
They kiss. At Eddie's, a bartender wipes down a bar, empty except for a policeman reading at the far end.
Hi, Paula.
Hi, Eddie.
Give us a couple of cold beers, will you? Coming up.
Hi.
Frank and Paula sit at a table. He holds out a pack of cigarettes, and she takes one.
Oh, what a relief. This air conditioning feels good. I sure wish we had it in the office. It'd make working a pleasure.
Well, if it stays this hot, don't bother going in the rest of the week.
I win 2 races today.
How many did you lose?
Now, you would have to ask that. Kind of early for you two, ain't it?
Too hot to work.
That's what I'd like to hear.
Eddie leaves 2 beers. Paula takes a sip of hers, and Frank tips his back, nearly finishing it. Paula slides her chair closer and whispers into Frank's ear.
Frank, you'll take me with you, won't you? You will, won't you?
He takes a drag from his cigarette.
Or am I crowding you?
What do you mean, crowding me?
Maybe you do need this week away alone. Maybe we both do. I know what's going on inside of you, Frank. You're just like any other man, only a little more so. You have a feeling of being trapped, hemmed in, and you don't know whether or not you like it.
Look, Paula, I'm going to be honest with you. I care too much for you not to be honest with you. I'm as much concerned for your happiness as I am for my own.
I know you've had one bad experience, Frank. I know all about it.
But you don't know what it can do to 2 people, Paula. And the woman always gets hurt more than the man. I don't want you to get hurt, darling. More than anything in the world, I don't want you to get hurt.
Frank holds his hand to her chin. He looks away, then back.
Want to hear some music?
All right, Frank.
Frank walks to the bar, where Eddie chats with the policeman.
Got a couple of nickels, Eddie?
Yeah.
This won't bother you, will it?
No, next result doesn't come in for half an hour.
Paula switches her full glass with Frank's nearly empty one. He sits back down and takes a sip.
I thought that by now we'd be married. No, I'm not going to crowd you anymore, Frank. Go to San Francisco. I don't like it, but I'm convinced that you must go. I want you to be very sure, Frank. If it's right, and I believe it is, we'll have something really wonderful together.
He kisses her hand.
If it isn't, we should both know it as soon as possible. So you see, even if I could stop you, I wouldn't do it now.
They kiss. Fade to black. Densely packed city buildings rise by a bay. Now night, a 50s-era taxi with sweeping, rounded fenders pulls up in an awning labeled St. Francis. A doorman lets Frank out, and a bellhop takes his suitcase. At the front desk.
Yes, sir.
My name is Bigelow. I have a reservation.
Yes, sir.
Frank glances at a woman who walks away. He turns his back to the desk to watch her.
Here we are, sir.
My name is Bigelow. I have a reservation.
I have it, sir. It's a very nice room on the sixth floor, facing the bay. Boy, this might help you enjoy your stay, Mr. Bigelow. It's a little booklet on how to have fun in San Francisco.
Oh, thank you.
Very welcome, sir.
Two young women walk up and hand a key to the desk clerk. Frank grins.
Say, is it always like this around here?
No, this is market week, and it's the last day, too. Boy, always around until you need them.
Another woman.
0517?
The clerk hands messages to the woman.
Here's a message for you, Mr. Bigelow. Long-distance call came in about an hour ago from Banning, from a Paula Gibson.
Oh, thank you.
Very welcome. Show Mr. Bigelow to 618.
Right this way, sir.
Frank follows the bellhop down a crowded hallway. He squeezes around a woman in a tall hat who looks him up and down. As the bellhop unlocks a door, another woman passes by, eyeing Frank.
Right this way, Mr. Baker.
Frank takes a few glances back at the woman, then walks into his room. The bellhop follows him with the luggage. Frank gazes through the open door to the room across the hall, where the woman wearing the tall hat dances with a man.
Is there anything else, Mr. Bigelow?
Oh, yes, you can give me a dry Manhattan and a pack of razor blades.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Oh, and you can leave that door open. Hello, operator. I want to speak to Miss Paula Gibson in Banning, California.
Yeah, that's right. No, I'll wait.
Paula at home.
Hello?
Hello, Paula.
Oh, hello, Frank. How was the trip?
Fine, just fine.
Having a miserable time, I hope.
Well, I don't know. I just got in.
A woman hugs a man across the hall.
What was that?
Market week. The place is crawling with traveling salesmen.
You know, Charlie Anderson found out that you went away and he asked me to go out with him.
Oh, really? How did he make out?
I'm considering it.
Is that what you called to tell me?
I'll have you know that this call is strictly business, Mr. Bigelow. Did a Mr. Phillips phone you? A Eugene Phillips of Los Angeles?
No.
He will. He phoned the office three times today. Said that he wanted to get in touch with you immediately. He said it's most urgent and imperative that he reach you at once.
What'd he want?
I don't know. But he sounded deep, dark, and mysterious and quite agitated about something.
Phillips, have we ever done any business with him?
Not unless you've been keeping it a secret from me. I looked through all the accounts.
Across the hall, the woman in the tall hat waves to Frank. He waves back.
Why did you tell him you could reach me here? You know I'm supposed to be on vacation.
So you told me. And so I told him, dear heart. But the gentleman didn't seem to respect your temperamental moods the way I do. He was very insistent that he speak to you before it's too late, as he put it.
Well, tell him you tried to get in touch with me and I've changed my plans and you can't reach me.
He won't talk to me. I told him that I was your confidential secretary, but I guess I didn't sound confidential enough. So I told him that he could reach you there this evening.
Well, call him back. If it's as important as he says it is, he'll talk to you. Otherwise, he'll just have to wait until I get home.
Ma, aren't we adamant this evening? All right. Shall do. And Frank?
Yeah?
I don't quite know how to say this.
Say what?
Well, what I want to say is that there's nothing you can do that you ever have to feel guilty about.
Sure. Thanks, Paula. I'll call you tomorrow. Right?
Frank hangs up. Paula kisses into the phone, then grins as she lies back in her chair. At the hotel, Frank digs a cigarette out of his pack, then stands to smoke it. The bellhop enters with Frank's Manhattan.
Oh, just put it there, please.
He sets the drink on a dresser.
You can keep the change.
Thanks very much.
Say, how long has this been going on?
Oh, it's been a madhouse all week. But they check out tomorrow.
Oh?
I thought you were with them.
No, I'm just here on a vacation.
Why does everybody come to San Francisco and tear loose?
A man rushes in, bumping into the bellhop.
Excuse me. Say, I'm awfully sorry to bother you, but would you mind if I use your telephone?
No, go right ahead.
I'm just across the hall here. One of the boys is using my phone, and he's been on it for a half hour. I just want to call downstairs.
Yeah,
thank you. Room service, please.
Turns to Frank.
Yeah, things really picked up the last few days, didn't they? Right at much business?
Well, I'm not here on business.
Oh, room service? It's Mr. Haskell in 617. Yes, that's right. Would you send up three more bottles of bourbon
And two scotch. Oh, and some more ice, too.
Yeah. All right, thank you. You here alone?
Yes, I just got in town.
Well, why don't you join us for a drink?
Well, I don't want to barge in on your party.
Oh, nonsense. It's not a party. Just a few of the boys entertaining some buyers. You know, the usual thing. A few drinks and some laughs. It's no party. Come on.
Well,
come on, come on, come on.
Right.
I know what it's like to be all alone in a strange city. I'm Sam Haskell.
I'm Frank Bigelow.
You think some of these guys never been away from home before?
Yeah.
In the room, couples dance and chat.
Hey, quiet down a minute. Hey, will you quiet down a second? I want you to meet Frank Bigelow.
Hello. Hi. This is Jane Carlisle.
Hello.
Bill Welch.
How are you, Mr. Welch?
Glad to know you, Bigelow.
Jane's the prettiest buyer in San Francisco.
Oh, hey, I resent that.
You don't think I believe him, Elaine? Well, he's read that from coast to coast.
Oh, gee.
Oh, but it's good for my morale anyway.
I'm George Cantwell. Glad to know you, Mr.
Bigelow.
Bigelow, yes. Right on much business?
He's not here on business.
Oh? Well?
Why don't you get the man a drink before he dies of thirst?
Hop a little bourbon.
Well, that's fine.
Bourbon it is.
A man on a phone struggles to reach his drink. Frank hands it to him.
Yes, Mr. Wallace. But, Mr. Wallace, I'll need at least a week in Cleveland to visit all my accounts. I can't figure on being in Philadelphia until the 17th.
Eddie, will you get off the phone? I want you to meet Frank Bigelow.
How are you, guys?
That's his boss. He's been trying for an hour to get his expense account boosted.
Yeah, the way this guy holds on to a dollar, you'd think they weren't printing them anymore.
Yes, Mr. Wallace. I'm leaving here the first thing in the morning. Yes, sir.
A couple dances.
Oh, keep your hips loose, Harry, like
yep.
This.
The woman with the tall hat swings her hips.
How's he doing?
Oh, there's nothing wrong with Harry's brother. 2 years now, the Murray's when you see
him. Hey, now, that was going all right.
This is Sue and Harry Brandis.
Hello.
Hello, good
sir,
to meet you.
How are you?
Where'd you find her, Sam? On a dance marathon?
Oh,
she's
bourbon.
Oh, really?
Oh, thanks.
Now, I bet you could do the rumble.
Well, a little, but I'm kind of rusty.
Anything would be an improvement after Harry.
Well, how do you like that?
Well, there goes.
Sue puts her arm on Frank's shoulder. He puts his arm around her waist, and they dance.
You're good.
Oh, my wife, she's a good dancer, isn't she, Bigelow?
Oh, yeah.
Jane and Elaine come over.
Going to show us a good time tonight. Is this doing the town?
That's right. We practically bankrupt our stores to buy everything you've got. Then you keep us in this hotel room.
I agree. This is my last night to howl before I go back to being a dutiful housewife.
Well, it looks like we're stuck, boys.
This is where we blow all our commissions in one night.
Oh.
And you're coming with us, Bigelow.
Oh, no, thanks. You run along. I've got to get unpacked and have dinner.
Oh, no. You're not going to get away from me. Now that I found a man who can dance, I'm going to hang on to it.
On a poster, a man plays the saxophone. Words read, "The Fisherman." Then a musician playing the sax drops to his knees in front of the poster. He rises, and the shot widens to show a five-piece band. In the smoky room, people sitting and standing around crowded tables bob to the music. The group from the hotel fills one big table. Frank lights a cigarette as Sue leans on his shoulder. From across the table, Sam glares at the duo. Frank casts a sideways glance at Sam, then watches the band. At the table, Sue blows smoke in Frank's ear as Sam fumes. On stage, the sax player rocks violently. A man in the audience trembles to the music.
Blow up a storm, Fisherman!
The drummer's sticks whip into a blur. In the audience, a man drums his arms to the beat. One musician plays wide-eyed with his mouth open in a mad grin. The others sweat as they wail on their instruments. At the table, a dancer bumps into Sue, knocking her into Frank. She laughs.
Here, have a little bit of my drink, Frank.
No, thank you. Excuse me a moment.
Where are you going,
Sue,
Frank?
Excuse me. I think you've had enough.
Sam holds Sue back as Frank gets up from the table. A man in a long coat, checkered scarf, and brimmed hat sits down at the bar, his face hidden from view. Frank sits down nearby.
What'll it be?
Bourbon and water, no ice. Nice, quiet place you got here.
We'll hit the pitch in about an hour. That's when they really go out of their minds.
Who's the blonde?
At the end of the bar, a woman sways to the music.
Oh, she's one of the chicks that hangs around here. She's jive crazy.
Come again?
Oh, you ain't hip, pal. Jive crazy means that she goes for this stuff. Just between you and me, I don't get it either, but I gotta listen to it. They're all connoisseurs, music lovers. Me, I like Guy Lombardo.
A man lurches.
What's the matter with him?
Oh, he's flipped. The music's driving him crazy. Come down, Jack.
Oh, don't buy me, man. I'm being enlightened.
Is the blonde alone?
Oh, sure, society. She always comes in alone. Drives a big convertible, wears a mink coat, but knows everybody. But she always comes in alone.
Frank tosses a few bills on the bar and leaves.
Thank you.
I wanted to kiss you.
He makes his way over to the blonde. Another man leans in and intercepts.
What's your story, Jeannie?
Easy.
The man grins and turns to the music. Frank sits down.
Hello.
Easy. Dig the fisherman. Oh, that's really silk, isn't it?
Can I buy you a drink?
Sure, thanks. Give me a glass, Leo.
Leo, I left my blast at the other end of the bar.
The man in the scarf switches his glass with Frank's before the bartender retrieves it. The man in the scarf gets up and leaves.
My name is Jeannie. What's you?
Frank.
I've never seen you here before, Frank.
Well, I've never been here.
They toast and drink.
This isn't mine. Mine was bourbon.
Well, sure it is. You saw me pour it.
Give me a fresh drink.
Anything you say.
Oh, listen to that piano. Feel those vibrations. You don't get your kicks out of this, do you?
I can live without it.
Why do you stay here?
I don't know.
I bet I know. You're lonely in a big city. Why, you don't have to go into a routine with me. I like good company, too.
Frank glances back at the group from the hotel. Sue stands, looking around the room.
Say, there are some people there I want to avoid. Couldn't we get out of here?
Let me think about it.
Oh, come on. How about going somewhere else, then?
Why don't you meet me later?
Frank looks Jeannie up and down.
Okay. Where?
She writes on a slip of paper and hands it to Frank.
Call me at that number later. It's my next stop. They've got a band there that'll really send you.
See you, Jeannie.
Easy.
He hurries off, and she watches him leave. A taxi pulls up outside the Fisherman. In the distance, a suspension bridge's cables arc across the sky. Frank gets in the car, and it pulls away. Back at the hotel, Frank rushes to the phone in his room.
Never mind, operator.
Frank notices flowers and a card on a dresser. The card. I'll keep a light burning in the window. Sweet dreams, Paula. He tucks the card into his suit coat and picks up the number from Jeannie. His eyes shift side to side, then he tears up the number. He scatters the scraps into a waste can and tips his hat. Fade to black. Later, Frank tosses in bed. He winces and sits up. He runs his hands through his hair and slips on a robe over his pajamas. He walks to the bathroom and checks his tongue in the mirror. He splashes water on his face and neck. Frank pats his face dry with a towel, walks back into the other room, and picks up the phone.
Room service, please.
Later.
Come in.
A waiter enters, carrying a glass and bottle on a tray.
Be right with you, waiter.
Yes, sir. Rest well, sir?
Yeah, sure.
May I?
Go ahead.
The waiter pours a bit of liquid from the bottle.
It's on there for you.
Thank you, sir. Would you like anything else?
Oh, well, thank you. That's all.
Frank lifts the glass, then freezes.
Waiter.
Yes, sir.
Take this away.
Is there anything wrong, sir?
No, just take it away. I don't even want to look at it.
Are you all right, sir?
Yeah, sure. All right, I just had too big a night, I guess, that's all. I need some fresh air.
Of course. Thank you, sir.
Now day, Frank walks out of the St. Francis onto a bustling sidewalk. He leans against a lamppost and rubs his eyes, then jumps on a passing cable car. Later, the cable car crawls up a steep hill, then levels off. Frank hops down and crosses the street. He passes a multi-story stone building, then crosses a street that dips sharply toward the city below. He stops at a corner and stares up at a sign, Medical Building. Frank heads inside. Later in an office, a balding man inspects an x-ray as Frank ties his tie.
Lungs in good condition. Blood pressure normal. Heart fine. Well, it's a good thing everybody isn't like you, Mr. Bigelow. Put us doctors out of business.
I'm glad to hear it, Doctor. I was a little worried.
Don't let a little bellyache worry you. Could be just a change of climate.
Well, it isn't exactly an ache, Doctor. It's kind of hard to describe the feeling. Maybe it was the drinks I had last night. I might have mixed them too much, huh?
Let's have another look at that throat.
The doctor peers into Frank's mouth.
You may finish dressing now, Mr. Bigelow. I want to get the results of those tests we took.
Thank you, Doctor.
The doctor walks out of the room. Frank takes his coat from a rack and slips it on. He turns to see a young nurse eyeing him. She quickly looks down, leaves papers on the doctor's desk, and hurries out. The doctor returns with another man.
Mr. Bigelow, this is Dr. Schaefer.
Hello, Doctor. How are you?
Sit down, Mr. Bigelow.
According to the information you gave Miss Wilson, you're not married, Mr. Bigelow.
That's right.
Do you have any relatives, family, anyone in San Francisco?
No, no one. I don't know a soul in San Francisco.
Where is your home?
What is this, Doctor? Why all the questions?
You're a very sick man, Mr. Bigelow.
Sick? But you told me I was in good shape.
Yes, I know. But my preliminary examination didn't reveal your true condition.
You sound as if it's pretty serious, Doctor.
It's extremely serious.
I want you to understand that we wouldn't tell you something like this unless we were absolutely certain.
Well, of course, of course.
You must steel yourself for a shock, Mr. Bigelow.
Well, go on, Doctor. What is it you're trying to tell me?
Our tests reveal the presence in your body of a luminous toxic matter.
What is that exactly?
A poison that attacks the vital organs.
Poison?
We have no alternative but to tell you this.
Your system has already absorbed sufficient toxin to prove fatal.
I wish there was something that we could do.
What do you mean, wish? You mean there's nothing?
There is nothing anyone can do.
This is one of the few poisons of its type for which there is no antidote.
Frank springs up.
This is fantastic. This is the most ridiculous thing.
We don't have very long.
What do you mean?
A day, possibly a week, 2 weeks at the outside. It's hard to say exactly.
Well, this is impossible. I don't believe it. You've made a mistake. That's it. It could be a mistake, couldn't it? You have made a mistake, haven't you? Answer me.
Dr. Schaefer is an authority on toxicology.
Been no mistake, Mr. Bigelow.
Do you realize what you're saying? Well, you're telling me that I'm dead. Do you think you can explain my life away in just a few words? Why, I don't even know who you are. Why should I believe you?
You must calm yourself, Mr. Bigelow. We want to offer you every assistance that we've...
Assistance? Who wants your assistance? Who wants anything from you? You're nothing but a couple of phonies. Why, I think you're crazy. That's it. You're crazy. The both of you. You're crazy.
Frank takes his hat from the rack and storms out. then towering stone columns support a portico labeled Southern Pacific Hospital. Frank hurries up the wide stairs leading to the grand entrance. Inside, he bursts into the emergency unit. Nurses try to restrain him.
Where's the doctor?
You can't come in.
Come on, tell me.
You have to go to the medic before you come
here.
A man grabs Frank.
The trouble here. What's the matter with you?
Doctor, I want you to examine me for luminous poison.
Come right in here.
Later, Frank paces in a room. The doctor enters with a test tube of liquid.
Yeah, you've got it all right. Your system has already absorbed it.
Frank's jaw drops.
Are you sure, Doctor? Are you absolutely certain? Couldn't there be some mistake?
The doctor switches off the lights and the test tube glows.
There it is. Toxin is actually luminous in the dark. Now there's no doubt about it, Bigelow.
I don't feel sick. My stomach is just a little bit upset. Maybe it's not as bad as you think, Doctor.
That's characteristic. With a heavy jolt, you go suddenly in a matter of hours. But if the stuff is taken in a lesser degree, you last a while, and then...
The doctor switches on the light.
Give it to me straight, Doctor.
Well, a number of things are involved. The systemic condition of the individual, the amount consumed, exertion...
Yes?
You won't feel too badly for a while. Then it will happen suddenly. A day, 2 days, a week at the most.
Frank looks away, wide-eyed. His eye twitches.
A day? 2 days?
There's nothing that can be done now. If it had been caught in time, your stomach could have been washed out. But you've had it in you for some time now. For at least 12 hours, haven't you, Bigelow?
I don't know.
The doctor grabs his arm.
You don't know?
No.
Don't you know how you got it?
No.
This is no accident. Somebody knew how to handle that stuff. That wax is tasteless and odorless. And the amount of alcohol in your body, you must have got it in liquor.
I was drinking last night.
Arrange for your admission to the hospital immediately. Of course, I'll have to notify the police. This is a case for homicide.
Homicide?
I don't think you fully understand, Bigelow. You've been murdered.
The doctor picks up a phone and Frank staggers back.
Get me police headquarters, please. Homicide Bureau.
Frank turns and bolts out the door. Outside, he races down the steps and sprints down the sidewalk. He rushes through a crowd, knocking people out of his way as his tie and coat whip in the wind. Passes parked cars in a department store, then charges down the middle of a street, crossing cable car tracks and cutting in front of oncoming traffic. Later, he runs through an intersection. In the background, a double-deck suspension bridge cuts across the sky. Frank stops and leans against a newsstand, panting. He tilts his head back and closes his eyes. He opens them and stares into the sun. Girl chases the ball that bounces over to Frank. He picks it up and hands it to her. A woman leads the girl away. Then a young woman stops at the newsstand and waves into the distance. A man runs up and they embrace as Frank looks on. The couple walks off. Frank looks around, then tromps off down the sidewalk.
You've been murdered. This is no accident. Somebody knew how to handle that stuff. The amount of alcohol in your body, you must have got it in liquor.
Steps quicken. He clenches his jaw and stares straight ahead. crosses a street to the fishermen. A large sign on the two-story brick building reads, "Drink Coca-Cola." Nearby, a clock tower rises several stories from a sprawling building. Frank reaches the bar's front door, where a sign reads, "Closed, open at 6 p.m. He pounds on the door. Frank hurries off. Fade to black. At the St. Francis, Frank passes a cleaning lady in a hallway and knocks on the door of room 617.
Open up. Open this door, I tell you. Open it up or I'll break it down.
An older woman answers.
Where are those men who were here last night?
I don't know. There are no men here. Please go away.
Don't lie to me. Where are they?
Mister, this lady just checked in. Those men aren't here no longer. They checked out the hotel early this morning.
Please go away.
I'm sorry. I'm terribly sorry.
Frank crosses the hall to his room.
Hello?
Please, Mr. Bigelow, my eardrums.
Oh, hello, Paula.
Your enthusiasm overwhelms me. Why haven't you phoned me, or is there a quota on telephone calls up there?
I'm sorry. I've been busy.
I'll bet you have. Visiting the museums, no doubt. What's happening up there that's exciting or different?
Nothing. Not a thing.
I'll bet you miss me, but you're too stubborn to admit it.
Sure.
You know, if you'd like me to come up, I could pack a toothbrush and leave right away.
No.
Well, you don't have to snap my head off. You could at least make a pretense of missing me.
I'm sorry, Paula. Of course I miss you. Listen, Paula, Paula, it's just that I don't feel like talking now. I'll call you later.
Don't strain yourself. You phone me sometime when you feel more like talking.
Paula starts to hang up, then stops.
Oh, by the way, I called that Mr. Phillips back.
Phillips?
Yes, you know, the man that tried to reach you. Well, I'm afraid you'll never know why it was so important that he speak to you. His office said he died yesterday. Frank, are you there? Did you hear me?
Frank sits up and turns in his chair.
Die? When?
Yesterday. So you won't have to bother your little head about him anymore. You can just go ahead and have fun.
Paula, what did he die from? Do you know?
I suppose he died from whatever people usually die from.
Well, didn't they tell you? Don't you know?
What are you getting so excited about? You said you didn't even know the man.
Listen, where's his office located?
What difference does it make? You can't talk to him now. I told you, the man's dead.
Paula, will you stop talking so much and tell me where his office is?
All right. It's the Phillips Importing and Exporting Company, Bradbury Building, Los Angeles.
Bradbury Building, Los Angeles.
That's right. Say, this is really a switch.
Listen, if you want to reach me, I'll be in Los Angeles.
Are you out of your mind?
I'm sorry, Paula. I've got to hurry.
Wait a minute. Where in Los Angeles?
The Allison Hotel. Goodbye, Paula.
Frank rushes out of the room. Then a twin-engine passenger plane floats above clouds. Now, Frank walks briskly down a brick corridor with a polished tile floor. He stops to check a building directory on the wall, then hurries to an elevator. The operator slides a wrought iron gate shut, and the elevator rises. Later, Frank walks to a door labeled Phillips Import-Export Company. He steps inside and approaches a woman at a desk.
I'd like to see someone in charge here.
What is it regarding
you? Well, it's a personal matter. It's quite urgent.
Perhaps Mr. Halliday can help you.
Who's he?
He's our controller. Your name, please?
Bigelow.
Her eyes widen.
Mr. Bigelow to see you.
Send him in.
Go right in, please. That door.
A tall man in a gray suit comes over to shake Frank's hand.
Mr. Bigelow?
How are you, Mr. Halliday?
Halliday motions for Frank to sit.
What can I do for you?
Well, Mr. Phillips phoned my office several times yesterday. I'd like to find out what it's all about.
You know Mr. Phillips died yesterday?
Yes, I know.
Well, I don't understand. If he phoned you, didn't he tell you what it was about?
Well, he didn't speak to me. I wasn't in my office at the time, and he wouldn't tell my secretary.
Well, I'm afraid I can't be of much help, Mr. Bigelow. I have no idea why Mr. Phillips tried to reach you. I'm sorry you had to make the trip for nothing.
How do you know I made a trip? I didn't say anything about making a trip. I merely said he phoned my office. My office could be here in Los Angeles.
Halliday turns to an intercom.
Miss Foster.
The secretary comes in.
Yes?
Didn't you mention something yesterday about Mr. Phillips speaking with Mr. Bigelow in San Francisco?
I said that he had phoned Mr. Bigelow's office in Banning, but that Mr. Bigelow was staying at the St. Francis Hotel in San Francisco. I'm sorry you misunderstood me.
Do you know why Mr. Phillips called?
No, I don't.
All right, thank you, Miss Foster. You can understand that we've been somewhat upset around here. Now, if you don't mind...
Frank starts toward the door, then turns.
Does Mr. Phillips have a wife, family, anyone that could help me?
You can't intrude on people at a time like this just to satisfy some curiosity.
It isn't just curiosity.
Then I suggest you wait a week or so.
I can't wait.
Well, I'm sorry, you'll have to.
Well, there's always a phone book.
You're a pretty aggressive fellow, Bigelow. Are you quite sure that this is as important as you make it appear to be?
It's important.
Mrs. Phillips lives at the Sunset Arms Apartments.
Thank you.
I needn't tell you she's under a strain.
Frank glances at Halliday, then walks into the reception area. Halliday follows.
I suppose you're capable of using a little more tact with her than you demonstrated with me.
I think I can handle it. By the way, what was the cause of Mr. Phillips' death?
Suicide. He leaped from the balcony of his apartment.
Now a plaque above a door buzzer. Mr. and Mrs. Eugene Phillips. Frank presses the button.
Come in, Mr. Bigelow.
I'm Stanley Phillips, Eugene's brother. Halliday phoned that you were coming.
Stanley leads Frank across the room to where a blonde woman stands near an armchair.
This is my sister-in-law, Mrs. Phillips.
I'll try to make this as brief as possible, Mrs. Phillips.
I'm afraid I can't be of any help to you, Mr. Bigelow. I haven't the slightest idea why my husband wanted to speak to you.
Frank glances at Stanley, then back at Mrs. Phillips.
Well, I guess Halliday covered just about everything. Did your husband ever mention anything about me, Mrs. Phillips? Anything at all?
No. I can't recall Eugene ever having mentioned your name.
She turns away, her eyelashes fluttering. Frank paces across the room, then returns.
I hate to ask you this, Mrs. Phillips, but it's of vital importance to me. Do you know why your husband committed suicide?
Mrs. Phillips' jaw drops, and she hurries out of the room. Oh.
You're certainly not the most diplomatic person in the world, are you, Bigelow?
Frank walks to the door.
Were you a friend of my brother's?
I never met him.
Stanley follows Frank into the hallway, shutting the apartment door behind them.
My brother was in a jam, a pretty bad jam. He was arrested 2 days ago. He sold some iridium to a dealer by the name of Majak. It's a very rare metal, very costly. Anyway, the iridium turned out to be stolen. He was released on bail yesterday, but he faced a pretty stiff prison term.
Men have committed suicide for less.
Yes, I know. That's how the police feel about it. What puzzles me, though, is this crooked deal. Knowing Eugene, you wouldn't say he's the type of man to be mixed up in anything like that, now would you?
I told you I never met him.
That's right, so you did. Now, what's this all got to do with you, Bigelow?
I don't know.
Let's come clean with each other, Bigelow. Surely you must have some idea why my brother was so desperate to contact you.
I have no idea.
That's odd. Then how could it be of such vital importance to you?
Well, you seem to know the answer to everything else. Maybe you know the answer to that one, too.
Frank steps onto an elevator. Now at the Allison Hotel front desk, Frank signs the register. A receptionist hands him a slip.
There's a message here for you to call operator 82 at Banning.
Oh, thank you.
Show Mr. Bigelow to room 821.
Say, would you have the operator put this call through to my room right away? I'll take it up there.
Thank you. Hello, operator.
In the room, Frank tips the bellhop.
Here, I'll call you if I need anything.
Thank you, sir.
Hello, Paula?
Well, Sinbad, I'd just about given you up for lost. Do you mind telling me just why you rushed down to Los Angeles?
I can't explain it to you just now, Paula. I just can't explain it.
What's going on, Frank? You don't even sound like yourself.
Well, I...
He winces and clutches his stomach.
I'm just a little tired, Paula, that's all. But I miss you.
Oh, Frank.
Paula smiles wide.
I can't tell you how good it is to hear you say that. And here I was worrying that I'd lost my charm. When are you coming home, Frank?
Soon, Paula. I'll be home soon.
I'll go right out and get myself a permanent so I'll be pretty when you see me. Hey, guess what? I found that Phillips name in your notarial ledger.
Notarial ledger?
Yes, of all places. I remember now I made the entry myself. You had notarized a paper one morning before I came to work.
What kind of paper was it?
a bill of sale for a George Reynolds made out to Eugene Phillips of Los Angeles.
So you see, I was right. We hadn't done any business with Phillips, only indirectly.
What was the bill of sale for?
A shipment of iridium, whatever that is.
Iridium?
You mentioned at the time that this fellow Reynolds had made some kind of a deal in Palm Springs, and he stopped in your office early in the morning on his way north to have it notarized.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute, George Reynolds, that was about 6 months ago, wasn't it?
Paula scans the ledger.
That's right, 6 months ago.
Thanks, Paul. Oh, goodbye.
Goodbye. Hello, operator. Get that number back for me.
Now a card reads, rent a car, drive yourself. Frank signs it, F. Bigelow. From the driver's seat of a convertible, he hands the card to a man standing outside, then shoots away. At the Phillips residence.
I've got to talk to you, Mrs. Phillips.
Please, go away. I want to be left alone.
But I found out why your husband wanted to see me. It was in connection with a bill of sale.
Come in.
Thank you. What do you know about a man named George Reynolds?
George Reynolds?
Yes.
Why, that's the man my husband claimed sold him the iridium.
And what did Reynolds claim?
Reynolds disappeared.
Yes.
About 2 months ago, my husband grew suspicious that something was wrong. Since then, he tried in every way to locate Reynolds, but could find no trace of him.
But I don't get it. Your husband could have proved he made a legitimate deal by showing the bill of sale he got from Reynolds.
Then there was a bill of sale?
Yes, yes, of course there was.
Oh, my husband swore there was, but at the time of his arrest, he couldn't find it. It was mysteriously missing.
Well, then, if your husband could have shown proof, it would have been George Reynolds who would have faced the prison term.
Eugene was convinced that Reynolds had stolen the bill of sale. He was the only one who had reason to eliminate evidence of the transaction.
Thank you, Mrs. Phillips. Thank you very much. You've been very helpful.
He turns to leave.
Oh, if you'd only come sooner, Mr. Bigelow. My husband might be alive today.
I know.
Frank steps out, then pokes his head back inside.
The only thing that puzzles me, Miss Phillips, is that you haven't asked how I knew there was a bill of sale.
Frank leaves, and Mrs. Phillips brings her hand to her chin. Now Frank walks into the Phillips Import-Export Company office. The secretary stands in a mirror, applying lipstick.
Mr. Holliday isn't in. He should be back shortly.
I think you're the one who can help me, Miss Foster. Mr. Phillips tried to reach someone else before he called me yesterday, didn't he?
Why don't you ask Mr. Holliday?
Obviously, Mr. Holliday wasn't here yesterday, or he wouldn't have had to learn from you that Phillips called me. And you're the logical person to know who else Phillips called.
I don't believe that's any of your business, Mr. Bigelow.
Don't think you're revealing anything confidential, Miss Foster. I know that he tried to reach somebody else. Mrs. Phillips told me.
You're bluffing, Mr. Bigelow. I don't know what you're after, but you're trying to trick me. Mrs. Phillips didn't tell you a thing.
How do you know that?
Mrs. Phillips knows nothing about it.
She doesn't. Well, why wouldn't she? Wait a minute. I was talking about George Reynolds. Who did you think I meant? Just who is it that Mrs. Phillips doesn't know about?
I told you before, that's none of your business.
All right, young lady, I'm going to give it to you straight. Phillips was murdered.
Murdered? I don't believe you.
He called me because he needed me to clear him. Phillips was innocent. Innocent men don't have to jump out of windows.
Murdered?
Just who are you trying to protect, Miss Foster? Why are you so afraid to tell the truth?
I'm not protecting anybody.
Frank grasps her by the arm.
Listen to me. This thing is going to explode wide open. If you've got nothing to hide, you better start talking. Or maybe you are mixed up.
No!
Well, then, come on.
Mr. Phillips called Marla Recubian. He went to see her yesterday morning.
Who's Marla Recubian?
She's a model. She and Mr. Phillips used to be quite friendly, but he hadn't been seeing her for quite some time.
Come on.
The last couple of months, he'd been trying to locate her and finally learn where she lived yesterday morning. When he returned from seeing her, he was terribly upset and excited. That's when he heavy put in the calls for you. When he couldn't reach you, he went home. The last time I saw him alive.
Give me Marla Recubian's address.
Frank hands her a notepad.
I don't think Mr. Phillips realized I was aware of his friendship with Marla Recubian, and out of respect for him, I never intended to tell anybody. I had no idea that she had anything to do with the trouble he was in.
I admire your discretion, Miss Foster.
Frank takes the address and walks away.
You know, you must be pretty friendly with Stanley, Miss Foster. He knew how desperately his brother tried to reach me yesterday, and he wasn't even here at the time. And now you seem to know all about what happened in Mrs. Phillips' apartment.
Miss Foster's eyes widen, and she shakes her head. At an apartment, a young woman lets Frank in the door.
Miss Recubian?
Yes?
He storms in.
What do you want? Get out of here, or I'll call the
police. Go ahead, call.
Frank glances at luggage on a couch.
Going on a trip, huh?
Yes, going away for the weekend.
Sailing for Buenos Aires tomorrow, some weekend.
I'll send you a postcard. Now get out of here.
Who are you going with, George Reynolds?
Never heard of him.
I suppose you've never heard of Eugene Phillips, either.
Just who are you? What do you want?
Never mind who I am. Where's Reynolds?
I told you I don't know him. Now, will you get out of here and leave me alone?
While his back is turned, she starts to close her suitcase. He notices and snatches a photo from inside.
So you never heard of George Reynolds, huh? And don't try to tell me that this isn't him, because I've seen him.
If you think you can scare me, you're crazy.
Look, I know that Phillips came here yesterday. And right after he left, he was pushed out of a 6-story window.
Pushed? Phillips committed suicide.
Your playmate Reynolds murdered Phillips. And then he went up to San Francisco to get me. Because I knew about a certain bill of sale.
I don't know what you're talking about.
You're in this right up to your pretty little neck.
I'm not mixed up in anything. Get your hands off.
She points a handgun at Frank.
Turn around. Don't get any ideas, because I'm not afraid to use this. Give me your wallet.
He pulls it from a pocket inside his coat and hands it to her.
Frank Bigelow, Hotel Alex.
Frank spins and tosses her onto the couch. He stuffs the gun in his pocket.
All right, now where's Reynolds?
I don't know. I don't know where he is.
Is that what you told Phillips yesterday?
I told him exactly what I'm telling you. I haven't heard from him in months.
Yeah? You're mighty careful of the picture of a man you haven't heard from in months. What does the Ray stand for?
Was a pet name. Do you mind?
It all sounds very cozy, Miss Recoupian. You and Reynolds call each other pet names while you make a sucker out of Phillips.
Phillips made the deal because he wanted it.
Yeah? I'll bet you weren't above using what it takes to help make him want it. Who's paying for this trip?
I am.
Really? A first-class trip to Buenos Aires on a model salary. Don't make me laugh. Since you and Reynolds aren't seeing each other anymore, you don't mind if I keep this to you.
The photo.
If I were a man, I'd punch your dirty face in.
Frank grins.
You know, I really believe you would.
He starts to leave, then turns.
Oh, I almost forgot. Your tickets.
He throws them at her.
Don't be surprised if I'm there to see you off.
Now Frank pulls his convertible up outside a factory building. He heads into a small shop with a sign that reads, Photographic Studios. Inside, a man flips through a card catalog. Frank watches and pounds his fist on the desk.
Angelo! Angelo!
A man in an apron comes over from another room.
Oh, Angelo. Do you remember taking this picture of George Reynolds?
I take so many pictures, I can't remember them all.
This gentleman is a friend of his and would like his address. We have no card on him.
I don't think we ought to do that.
He's willing to pay $20 for it.
That's the paper we used last year.
Of course, you understand we usually don't give out the information about our clients.
I know. You're a couple of high-class fellas.
Thank you. Revealing anything confidential is against the ethics of our establishment.
That's right. Honesty is the best policy.
Of course. But in your case, inasmuch as you're a personal friend of Mr. Reynolds...
Thanks. I knew you'd come through.
Got it.
Angelo brings a negative.
Here it is. We don't have his address. He must have called for the picture.
But he couldn't have been a very good friend of yours, mister, because his name is not George Reynolds.
It isn't. Well, what is it?
It's a...
Angelo stops him. Frank digs out money.
Oh. Yeah, it's Raymond Recoupian.
Recoupian?
Frank grabs the negative.
What's so unusual about that? A picture signed Ray, isn't it? Yeah.
He hands the negative back and walks away.
Yeah. Thanks.
Frank hurries out the door and strides toward his car. Frank dives behind his car and pulls the gun from his coat. A bullet hits the dirt behind him. He slinks around the driver's side of the car. Another shot kicks up dust right in front of him. Frank hurries through a ditch, moving along a pipe. He jumps out and scampers behind equipment. Frank keeps his head low as he moves between stacks of barrels and crates. He dashes across an opening and into the factory. Pipes, ladders, and beams rise up all around the large room. Frank brushes away a spider web as he runs behind a tank. He backs slowly through the room, his gun at the ready. Pigeons whip past his head. Frank hurries deeper into the factory. A pile of debris falls to the floor a few feet away. Frank fires up at the ceiling. He rushes upstairs that lead to a network of catwalks running amid the pipes. He stops at an intersection and gazes around. He turns right and moves slowly down a catwalk. Frank hurries forward and turns right down another catwalk. He runs around a second staircase and stops at a broken window that looks out over his parked car. He picks up a matchbook discarded amid a few cigarette butts. The Fisherman logo decorates the cover. Frank stuffs the matchbook in his pocket and hurries off. From the top of the stairs, he sees the factory door close. Frank hurries down the stairs, jumping the last few. He opens the door and runs outside, peering into the distance. Frank hurries to his convertible, fade to black. Later, Frank lurches into Phillips Import-Export. Mr. Halliday greets him.
Oh, Bigelow, are you all right? Can I get you anything?
No, thanks.
The photo.
Do you know this man?
No, I don't think so.
Are you sure you've never seen him?
I'm quite sure.
Does the name Raymond Rakubian mean anything to you?
No, I never heard of him. Why?
He also uses the name George Reynolds.
This is Reynolds?
That's right.
Well, where can we find him?
That's what I want to know. Tell me something, Halliday. You're the controller here. How come you didn't know about that bill of sale?
Phillips made that deal before I came to work here.
Yeah, but you still keep records, don't you?
For some reason, which is none of my business, Phillips preferred to keep that among his personal papers. Now, does that answer your question? You came in here today asking for some information that you needed, and I tried to be as cooperative as I could. But now you're beginning to annoy me. So get out before I throw you out.
Frank walks to the door, then stops to face Halliday.
You know, you really frighten me.
Now night, Frank pulls his car up outside the Allison Hotel. Behind him, traffic and pedestrians stream through an intersection. Frank opens the glove box and slips the gun inside. Later, Frank walks into his room. A man jumps out from behind the door and shoves a gun in his back.
Well, it's about time you showed up, Bigelow.
Two other men stand.
Go ahead, Dave.
Dave, a tall man wearing a dark suit, pats down Frank. He pulls the photo from Frank's coat pocket.
Real cute, ain't you, Bigelow? Just real cute.
Mama didn't lose much time getting a hold of you guys, did she?
Shut up. Let's go, Bigelow. Look at him. He can't take it. Soft in the belly.
Frank clenches his stomach.
You do that again and I'll kick your face.
Dave.
Lay off, Chester. Cut it out.
Shut up! Who asked you?
They all stare at the phone.
Better let him answer. The clerk might know he's in.
Go ahead, Bigelow.
Chester shoves Frank toward the phone. Dave holds the receiver to Frank's ear.
Hello?
Frank. Frank, why did you hang up on me? I've been trying to get you for hours.
I'm sorry, Paula. I was in a hurry.
Well, don't be in such a hurry this time. You didn't give me a chance to finish what I had to say.
Listen,
Dave. I wanted to tell you that McGowan was in hollering his head off because you didn't go over the books.
Tell McGowan to get another auditor.
Sure, I'll just do that little thing. And who's the best paying account we've got?
Do as I tell you, Paula.
Frank, are you drunk?
Paula, how much we got in the bank?
About $2,200.
Draw it out tomorrow.
Sure. Then what do? Skip town without paying our bills?
Forget the bills. You know that coat you always wanted? Buy it.
You are drunk. You know, if I didn't have such a good character, I'd be tempted to take advantage of your intoxicated state, Mr. Bigelow.
I'm not drunk, Paula.
Well, then don't tell me that one day away from me can affect you this way.
Cut it short.
Chester punches Frank's side.
Paula.
Yes?
I'm sorry I left you. I never realized how much I love you. But I know it now.
Oh, Frank, Frank, darling, I love you too so very much. Please come home. I miss you terribly.
I said cut it short.
Dave hangs up the phone.
I'd just love to let you have it, Bigelow. Let's go, Chester.
This guy's kept us waiting long enough now. Walk in front of him, Bigelow.
Chester holds the gun to Frank's head.
And keep your mouth shut. If you so much as look cross-eyed at anybody, I'll blow the back of your skull out.
He shoves Frank toward the door. The three men follow Frank out. Later, the men escort Frank through a heavy wooden door and into an ornately decorated room. They bring him before Marla Rakubian and an older man in a white suit who sit on a couch drinking tea.
This Bigelow's real cute. He wanted to get tough with Chester. He don't know Chester.
Did you get the picture?
Don't I always get what Mr. Majak sends me after? Major.
The man in white nods and cracks a faint smile.
That's right. I'm the dealer who bought the iridium from Phillips.
I get it. You have Rakubian unload stolen stuff on Phillips with the help of Marla here, and then you buy it back from him. Oh, you certainly made a sucker out of Phillips.
What is it, Mr. Bigelow? Exactly what is on your mind?
I'm looking for Raymond Rakubian.
What?
Well, now, Marla here has told you everything else. I'm sure she must have told you that, too.
You don't expect me to believe this conversation. So, what is on your mind? I mean, underneath. You forced your way into my affairs, and now I want to know why.
I just told you. I'm looking for Raymond Rakubian.
Don't get cute. I'm just itching to work you over. Soft in the belly. Can't take it.
Chester hits Frank.
See what I tell you?
Frank clocks Chester. The other thugs pull the two apart. Chester pulls his gun from his waist and jabs it into Frank's stomach.
Can't do that to Chester. I'm gonna blow your guts out.
Easy. Lay off, Chester. Not now.
Dave steps in and Chester hits him. Chester puts the gun to Frank's head.
He's so scared of Chester, he talk now. He's not afraid, Chester.
Chester looks at Majak.
You can tell from a man's eyes when he is afraid. Look at his eyes.
Chester stares Frank in the eyes, then slams his gun into Frank's belly.
Help!
Frank drops to his knees.
I'm telling you, Majak. You better keep him away from me, or he's really going to have to use that gun.
Majak walks up to Chester.
Go away, Chester, please.
He brushes hair from Chester's forehead.
Do what I tell you, my boy. Please. And help Dave.
Majak helps Frank up.
You're in pain. He's an unfortunate boy. He's psychopathic. He's unhappy unless he gives pain. He likes to see blood. Come with me, Mr. Bigelow.
Majak pulls back curtains from a doorway, and Frank follows him into the next room.
Raymond Rakubian was my nephew. He could not possibly have tried to kill you. He's been dead 5 months.
An inscription on an urn. Here lie the beloved remains of Raymond Rakubian.
I'm afraid you have been sidetracked. Provided it is true that somebody made an attempt on your life.
Somebody made an attempt again today.
I had no reason to kill you, believe me.
What do you mean you had no reason? I notarized a certain bill of sale.
You notarized the bill of sale for Reynolds?
Majak starts to walk away.
What I told you was true. I had no reason to kill you. That's a closet, Mr. Bigelow.
Frank tries a door.
Under other circumstances, you could go home now, but now you present a problem. You know too much, and I am in danger. Chester!
Suppose I were able to prove to you that I only want to find the person who tried to kill me, and I won't cause you any trouble.
You know I can go to jail for 10 years for this little business? 10?
Chester stands next to Majak.
My age, that's my life. That means my entire life. With my life, I do not take chances. I am sorry, believe me. You want Joe to go with you?
No. Just Bigelow and me.
Pets his gun.
And baby makes three.
Good Major.
Chester pushes Frank back.
Goodbye, Mr. Bigelow, and forgive me.
Let's go, Bigelow.
Frank passes by Marla.
I guess you won't be there to see me off.
Chester escorts Frank out of the room at gunpoint. Later, they motor down a city street at night. Chester drives.
You tried to make a boob out of me in front of Major.
Shouldn't have done that, Bigelow. I don't like that.
Chester grins at Frank.
I'm going to enjoy this, Bigelow.
His smile widens.
I've done jobs like this before. I knocked off guys I could like. But I don't like you, Bigelow. I never liked that puss of yours from the minute I seen it. Yeah. I'm going to enjoy this.
They continue down the road, passing flashing marquees and bright streetlights. Chester's eyes dart back and forth from Frank to the road.
You ain't scared yet, are you, Bigelow? But you'll be scared. Goodness, scared. I think I'll give it to you in the belly. You don't like it in the belly?
Frank's eyes widen as he spots two motorcycle cops stopped at the curb.
Good. Try. I just love you to try it, Bigelow. Why don't you try? Go ahead.
Frank wipes his hand over his forehead. Chester grins.
Didn't have a nerve, did you, Bigelow? Yeah. I think I'll give it to you right in the belly.
Frank stares down at the brake pedal between Chester's feet. He takes deep breaths and glances around.
It takes longer when you get it in the belly. It's nice and slow. That's the way I want to see you go, Bigelow. Nice and slow.
Frank shifts in his seat and slowly moves his foot toward Chester's. Chester puts his foot over the brake, and Frank slams his foot down on top. The car lurches to a stop, flinging Chester's head against the steering wheel. Frank hops out and sprints away. Chester follows. Frank darts into a drugstore where people stand at counters or drink at tables. People glance up as Frank hurries through. Chester strolls in, his hand tucked inside his jacket. He takes quick steps through the store, then draws his gun when he sees Frank's shadow on a wall. A customer opens her mouth to scream. Frank sees the shadow of the gun and knocks a stack of boxes over, burying Chester. Frank dives behind a lunch counter. A man and woman turn from their shakes to look down at him. The woman sees Chester wielding the gun. Another woman. Frank follows the couple away from the counter, dodging one of Chester's shots. Chester fires again between aisles of goods. A pharmacist hurls a bottle at Chester and it breaks on his head. Chester stumbles back. A policeman enters the front door and guns him down. Customers rush out of the store as the policeman inspects Chester's still body. Frank walks out from behind a display case. Frank limps out the front door. Now at the Allison Hotel, Paula paces outside the entryway. A cab pulls up and Frank darts out, tossing money to the cabbie through an open window. Frank runs to his convertible. He looks up and Paula runs to him. Frank glances side to side and leans her away from the car. They stop around a corner.
Frank, are you all right?
Yes, I'm all right, Paula, but what are you doing here? How did you get here?
Freddie Ross threw me down. I had to come. I had to see you.
You shouldn't have come, Paula. You shouldn't have.
What is it, Frank? You're in some kind of trouble. I know it. Look at you. You're a sight. Your clothes look as if you've slept in them. Are you ill? You are. You're feverish.
I'm all right, Paula, and I'm not in any trouble, believe me.
You're lying, Frank. Right after I spoke to you, I got a phone call from the San Francisco police. They asked if I knew where you were.
You didn't tell them anything, did you?
Of course not. It was the homicide detective that called.
Frank turns away.
What is it, Frank? If you're in any kind of trouble, you certainly can trust me.
Look, I'm not in any trouble with the police, Paula, believe me. But you can stay here. You've got to go back to Banning right away.
No, I won't go, Frank. I won't. I'm staying here with you.
Paula, it's better that you go back, believe me.
Why? What's this all about? What have you got to do with this Phillips and Reynolds?
Frank looks Paula up and down.
Phillips was murdered.
What could that possibly have to do with you? All you did was notarize a paper. You've notarized hundreds of papers.
I know. All I did was notarize one little paper out of hundreds.
Frank, you frighten me. You don't even act like yourself. I know that you're in trouble, that something is wrong, that you're in serious trouble. You frighten me, Frank.
Oh, don't be frightened, Paula.
They embrace.
Don't ever be frightened of anything again. Will you promise me that?
I love you so much, darling, more than you seem able to understand.
Oh.
I never really knew happiness until I loved you. Sometimes when I used to be afraid that you weren't sure how you felt, I tried to hold back, but I couldn't. Losing you would have been losing everything. There would have been nothing left.
Don't, Paula, don't.
Now I'm afraid again. Somehow I feel that I'm going to lose you, but there's nothing I can do about it. I feel so helpless. You're leaving me out of something. Tell me, Frank, what is it? Give me a chance to fight back. Just give me a chance, please. You do love me, don't you?
Oh, yes, Paul, I love you. I never was more certain of anything in my life. I wasn't sure before. I was a little blind, I guess. But believe me, I'm sure now. Can you understand that, Paula?
I understand.
A man can be like that, Paula. Something has to happen. It can be a big thing or a little thing, but it can make him realize how much someone means to him, how much he really loves her. Oh, and I love you, Paula. More than I ever thought it possible to love anyone in the world, I love you.
Then why won't you tell me about this trouble you're in? Why won't you try to let me help you?
You can't help me, Paula.
You don't want my help.
Oh, Paula, there's nothing you can do. Will you believe me? So will you please go home, please?
No, Frank. I won't go. I know you're in trouble. I can't leave you like this.
All right, Paula, look, wait for me in the lobby of the hotel, and I'll be back for you soon, I promise.
You promise?
Yes,
you're sure?
Paula, I promise. Is that a new outfit?
She smiles.
Yes.
Oh, that's beautiful.
They wrap their arms around each other and kiss.
You'll come back to me, won't you, Frank?
Yes, Paula, I'll come back, I promise.
Please hurry, darling. Oh, I love you.
I love you, Paula.
Frank kisses her again, then runs his hand lightly down the side of her face.
Goodbye, Paula.
Frank turns and starts to walk away. He stops and waves back to her, then gets in his car. Paula turns away and buries her face in her hands. Fade to black. Now Miss Foster opens a door and peers into a hallway. Frank springs up behind her and covers her mouth with his hand.
Stanley here? You sure?
He shoves her back into the room.
All right, get in.
He points his gun.
Get Stanley on the phone. Tell him to come over here right away. Use any excuse you want.
What are you going to do?
What was Stanley going to do when he used me for a clay pigeon today?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Don't act innocent with me. I fell for that once.
I don't know what you mean. I told you everything you wanted to know this morning.
Yeah, you told me just enough so I'd get sidetracked and wouldn't know that Stanley was the one I was after.
Stanley? Oh, no.
You and Stanley have been together on this from the start. Now, come on, get on that phone and call him. Don't let him know I'm here.
Bigelow.
Frank turns to a doorway. Stanley staggers into the room, clutching his stomach. Miss Foster helps him into a chair.
You've been sidetracked, all right.
But it was the poor bereaved little widow who did it. Miss Foster found this letter this afternoon. It's in my brother's desk at the office. It's postmarked 2 years ago. It isn't exactly the kind of a letter that a married woman gets from a casual friend. I'm sure my brother wasn't aware that they were so well acquainted when he hired Halliday.
Frank steps closer, and Stanley cringes.
What's the matter with him?
He hasn't felt right since dinner.
Where did he have dinner?
At Mrs. Phillips' apartment. Halliday was there, too, and Stanley confronted them with that letter.
Do you have anything to drink?
Yes, why?
How long ago?
Half an hour ago, just before I came here.
Miss Foster, get on the phone, call the emergency hospital. Have them get an ambulance over here right away.
What?
Tell them to prepare a stomach wash for luminous poisoning.
Luminous poisoning?
Come on, do what I tell you. He may still have a chance to save his life. Go on!
Frank pushes Miss Foster back towards Stanley and runs out of the room. Later, he pulls his convertible up at a curb and slips out the passenger side door. Now in the Phillips apartment.
I found George Reynolds, Mrs. Phillips. He's been dead for 5 months.
Then he didn't steal a bill of sale.
No, he didn't, but you could have stolen it.
How dare you?
You knew who I was when I came here today. But you were surprised to see me alive, weren't you? But I'm not alive, Mrs. Phillips. Sure, I can stand here and talk to you. I can breathe and I can move. But I'm not alive. Because I did take that poison. and nothing can save me.
She tries to flee, and he flings her out onto the balcony.
What are you going to do?
I tell you now, I have nothing to lose.
No, no, you've got to listen to me. You've got to give me a chance.
But I didn't have a chance.
It was Halliday. Believe me, it was Halliday. He made me steal the bill of sale. He planned everything.
What about this letter? Your husband knew about you and Halliday.
He found it only yesterday. He accused Halliday. They fought, and Halliday pushed him over this balcony.
And why me? Why did he want to kill me?
Because you could have proved there was a bill of sale, that my husband had no reason to commit suicide. Halliday was desperate. After he killed my husband, he found out about the phone calls to you. He thought you spoke to him, that you knew enough to involve him.
Frank peers over the edge, then tosses Phillips back toward the apartment. Below, three men exit a car. Frank sprints back into the apartment and grabs Mrs. Phillips, who struggles.
Where's Halliday? Where is he?
He's in the office.
This time you don't want him.
Frank pushes her into a closet and storms out of the apartment. Downstairs, he peers around a corner, then steps out into a parking area. He clutches his stomach and stumbles. Frank plods past a parked car, keeping low. Then he sprints across an open space and slips behind a column. He hurries to the garage entrance and starts to peer out, then slinks back. Majak and Dave appear in the entranceway. Frank hides in the shadows. The two men walk off, followed by the other thug, Joe. They walk along a row of arches spanning the building's facade. Majak directs the men to split up. Frank exits the garage and crouches behind bushes. Dave jumps out from behind a column and grabs Frank from behind. Frank flips him over his shoulder and into a bush, then sprints off.
Majak!
Dave motions for Majak, then chases Frank down the sidewalk. Majak and Joe jump into their convertible as Frank and Dave bolt down the street. Majak guides his car out onto the street. Frank hops on a city bus before it pulls away into heavy traffic. Dave flags down Majak and Joe. He hops in and they follow. On the bus, Frank teeters down the aisle and collapses into an open spot next to a woman who looks him up and down. Frank rests his head on the back of the next seat up. Majak and his thugs pull up alongside the bus. Majak smiles and points up at Frank. In the bus, Frank looks back and sees Majak's car keeping pace. Majak smiles up at Frank. Frank turns away. Frank looks back, and Majak gives a slight nod. Majak pulls his convertible ahead of the bus and stops at the next station. Dave hops out and waits for the bus as a policeman looks on. The bus pulls up and Dave enters through the front door. Frank sinks into the aisle and crawls to the back door, slipping off just as Dave climbs on. The bus drives off with Dave. The policeman motions for Majak to move his car. Frank approaches.
Come on, Mister, break it up. Come on, come on. Come on, move along. Come on, let's break it up. Move along now. Let's get going. Come on.
Majak slowly pulls away, followed by two cops on motorcycles. Frank sprints across the street. Later, Frank looks up at an office building from across a busy intersection. Two windows glow on the fourth floor. Frank crosses to the building, hurries through the entrance, and runs down the tiled corridor. He slips and falls against a brick wall, then picks himself up and dashes into the elevator, closing the wrought iron gate behind him. The elevator rises. Then Frank steps out and eyes the door to the Phillips Import-Export Company. The man in the checkered scarf and brimmed hat exits and shuts off the lights. Frank lurches down the hallway toward the man. The man turns. It's Halliday. A cigarette dangles from his mouth. Frank and Halliday take slow steps toward each other. Halliday pulls the cigarette from his mouth and freezes. Frank clenches his jaw. Halliday bolts down a stairway, then turns and fires at Frank. Frank fires back, dropping Halliday. The scene fades to the Homicide Division office. Frank leans heavily on the captain's desk. Five other men slouch on chairs, desks, and windowsills. Frank closes his eyes and drops his forehead to his fist. He looks up at the captain.
All I did was notarize a bill of sale. But that piece of paper could have proven that Phillips didn't commit suicide. It was murder. And that's why Halliday poisoned me.
Frank stands and drops a slip on the desk. He leans in toward the captain.
Would you?
Frank winces and drops his head. Then he looks up, his cheeks puffing in and out.
Paula.
Frank falls to the ground, and the men gather around. One of them leans down close. He looks up and directs a slight nod at the captain.
Call him, Morgan. Johnson, you go to the Allison Hotel, find Paula Gibson. Don't tell her anything. I'll break it to her.
The captain stares down at Frank.
How shall I make out the report on him, Captain?
Better make it dead on arrival.
A stamp marks bold letters across a missing person report, DOA. Fade to black. The End, a Harry M. Popkin production, a United Artists release. More words, the medical facts in this motion picture are authentic. Luminous toxin is a descriptive term for an actual poison. Technical advisor, Edward F. Dunn, M.D. Cast, Frank Bigelow, Edmund O'Brien, Paula Gibson, Pamela Britton, Majak, Luther Adler, Miss Foster, Beverly Campbell, Mrs. Phillips, Lynn Baggett. Halliday, William Ching, Stanley Phillips, Henry Hart, Chester, Neville Brand, Marla Recubian, Lorette Luez. Audio description by CaptionMax, www.captionmax.com. Audio description written and read by Adam.
Accessibility features provided by CaptionMax, www.captionmax.com.